Bienvenue au train des yeux. Nous sommes ici à jouer au basketball. Il va vous conduire à la victoire. Car bonne la lente grande effort. Et l'esprit du bel an qui vit en tous les mans. Et l'esprit qui ne meurt jamais. Parce que basketball, oui, basketball a arrivé.
Jouer.
Welcome to Bizcast Ball, the Basketball Bizcast. My name is Corbin Smith. I was sitting around tonight thinking about how I hadn't done a podcast, and I mentioned it on Twitter.com. And Patrick Redford, who's been on the show before, said, "Ah, let's record one." And I said, "Oh, okay." So me and Patrick got on Skype. We talked for an hour about basketball and some other stuff. There are inherent Vice spoilers. So enjoy.
How's it going, Corbin?
Not bad. How's it going with you?
Well, I watched some basketball today.
You did? You just watched the Kings game?
I watched part of the Kings game, but they let the Nets shoot 74% in the first quarter, and I became very frustrated with it.
Too much for you?
Yeah, like, this is the Nets we're talking about.
Yeah.
Would you say they're the most dysfunctional team this season?
You know, I think as long as the New York Knicks are around.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting they exist. Like, the Nets sort of exist on the fringe of relevancy where, like, you kind of have to think about them.
I never ever think about the Nets.
I think about them constantly. This is an affliction.
It's like you can't stop?
Yeah. Like, it's unhealthy. I think I like the idea of the Nets if they were just something like the diametric opposite of what they were. Like, but keeping the uniforms in the location. Like, I like the idea of a Brooklyn team with basic uniforms, just not this Brooklyn team.
With basic uniforms? Not with these players.
Yeah, I like the black and white.
I think the only time I've really thought about them, I'm almost totally sure I haven't watched a whole Nets game.
They're on national TV. They're the TNT game tomorrow, maybe.
They are?
Yeah, they're against the Clippers. This is not great radio, but, you know.
No, that's fine.
We'll just work out. We'll hit our stride.
I don't make great radio. I make transcendent radio.
If nothing else. Yeah. A man of the people.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what kind of transcendence it is, you know. The most I thought about him was when Garnett was headbutting Howard, I think. Remember that?
Kevin Garnett makes me sad.
Why? Is it just too line and wintery for you?
Yeah, but it's like so wintery.
Is it King Leary?
Yeah, it's King Leary. Like, he's howling away in the storm.
Yeah, I don't know. Everybody's got to come to an end, right?
It's true.
We're all gonna die.
Time, it's coming for us all.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I don't like Kevin Garnett, because he makes me uncomfortable with my own mortality.
Sports are maybe valuable. It's hard to say.
I don't think we can decide either way.
Yeah. Well, you and I can't here today. It'll take.
No.
I'll need to get like Bob on here for that. But
2-time podcast guest, yes, Bob.
2-time podcast guest.
2-time.
2-time. Not like you, 3-time podcast.
No,
guest.
Yeah. Thank you.
Would you like me to like send you a crown?
Yeah, I'd like that. Actually, yeah. Yeah, we can record a Bizcast Ball live episode. Perhaps, because I'll be in Vancouver, Washington, the Pacific Northwest.
The Grand Pacific Northwest. But sports play out
the life and
death cycle in front of our eyes.
Metamorphosis.
The metamorphosis from a live person to a dead person. Because you see a young player with a lot of raw physicality, but not a lot of experience. He grows into the peak of his life.
He learns, he makes mistakes.
He grows into a nexus between experience and youth. He grows to a peak in that regard. And then he withers away. And we see that all of the experience in the world can't hold death off. There's nothing that can happen, you know.
So then why try? You know, why become a professional basketball player if it's all going to end? If it's all to just go through this cycle and, you know, become a bad commentator, perhaps run a pyramid scheme or something in your old age?
Well, because you get paid an awful lot of money to do it.
Money buys happiness?
I don't know, it buys something, right?
Buys, yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm just saying this as a viewer, like from the objective viewpoint of a viewer,
mm-hmm.
a person who watches professional athletes, like that's what happens. Like you see the cycle. But for that person, you know, playing sports is hopefully just the beginning of their life.
Yeah. Who do we know that has had a successful, fulfilling life after basketball?
Who we absolutely know they have.
Yeah.
I would say Magic Johnson probably has.
What does he do? He's an analyst?
He's a entrepreneur.
He's a man about town.
Yeah. He owns movie theaters, TGI Fridays.
I bet many are fulfilled, you just don't know about it.
Yeah. I there's some who you see them and it's hard not to think, wow, that guy looks miserable. Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan seems like he's in a cage. But
owning an NBA team and watching courtside every time must be like an incredibly Sisyphean experience for him, where he just has to watch these numbskulls that he knows he could beat up. He knows he could take them one-on-one. He knows, you know, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, guy's a chump. Could beat that ass.
He beat him in one-on-one, apparently.
Right?
Somewhat recently, yeah.
Has Michael come on the podcast yet?
He fucked at two times. Two times. He's been
another
sitting in front of me.
Guest.
I said, let's talk about it, Michael, and he just leaves. He's taunting me.
Yeah. See, that's because he's unfulfilled.
Yeah. So he's just like picking on podcasters.
Yeah.
What a jerk. I'm glad he seems unhappy. I don't know. Did you read that? There was an article they wrote about him. I think it was in ESPN magazine when he turned 50.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that always stuck with me is that he obsesses over his Bejeweled score.
Oh man, that is the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, like he's got the iPad out and he's like, I need to get a higher Bejeweled score. It's just like,
I think
used
no
to
matter
be
what
Jordan.
Yeah, got it. I think no matter what you told me just there, I would have thought it was the saddest thing. Like, you could name any fact and as it pertains to Michael Jordan, and it would just seem sad, what, you know, because unless it's him dominating a basketball game, I just can't see him being happy in that situation.
What if I said, I read this article about Michael Jordan in ESPN magazine.
Oh, that's a good magazine.
And he runs a cat. He runs a cat rescue. He runs a cat rescue.
I thought you were going to say he runs a single cat through an obstacle course.
No,
that would make me happy, I guess.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like if he just had an immense compassion for animals that he finally got to explore. I think that is like the height of post-athletedom.
Yeah. Animals?
I don't know. Just loving animals. Like if you're an athlete, if you're a professional athlete, you play a professional athletics career, and then immediately at the end of the career, you're like...
Yeah.
You're just really into being kind to animals.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's giving back across species lines.
Yeah, and it's
that's why Zach Randolph's a fan favorite.
Yeah, or DeMarcus Cousins.
Oh yeah, he his I follow him on the social network Instagram, and he got a bulldog puppy, and it was, you know, cute as dang, little wrinkly fella, and it died from a bee sting.
Yes, it did. I can't. Do you remember his name, his or her name?
It was Loso.
And then it died. Oh man, that really that bummed
and
me.
I think that sort of spurred a compassion in him. Maybe I'm editorializing a bit, but since then he's been a lot more active in terms of the Bulldogs' rights movement.
Yes, change the stereotype. I saw a hashtag change the stereotype the other
more
day.
More than these wrinkles. Wait, what NBA player, and I want a quick answer, do you think owns a pug? Who's the most likely to own a pug?
Oh, wow.
3, 2, 1.
Andre Miller.
Oh, that's such a good answer. Andre Miller kind of is a pug, you know? I don't... he's got, like, a certain amount of physical disadvantage, like, i.e. a pug can't breathe, and yeah. Andre Miller, by all accounts, hasn't jumped since 1998. But, you know, they make it work. He's an industrious dude.
There's a story about Andre Miller when he played in Portland that he would go down to the waterfront all the time and rollerblade.
A proto Rajon Rondo, if there ever was one.
Oh yeah, Rondo roller skates. I forgot about that.
I feel like he roller skates in like a very official capacity. Like he would enter a competition in roller skate, whereas Miller would do it just for the love of the game.
Yeah, he just goes down to the waterfront, puts on a neon purple
and sweatpants shorts. Jacket.
Yeah. I was wearing shorts today. I'm actually wearing shorts right now. Not to brag or anything. I'm comfortable with my legs. How do you feel about your legs, Patrick?
Oh, I have great legs.
You're a cyclist.
Yeah, do you want to see?
Yeah. Oh my god. Wow, not a lot of... What aspect of cycling are you better at? Lengths or hills?
I prefer climbing.
Okay. I prefer lengthing.
Who would be a good cyclist from the NBA?
Who has big, ridiculous, dumb legs, I guess, is the question. I know LeBron does cycle.
Yeah, he has a Cannondale made him a bike, like a custom The King bike.
Yeah,
it's real ugly.
There's a I think he,
not to cast aspersions, but you know, it's not great.
I think that if you're like making LeBron mythology, I actually think cycling is part of the mythology because it's
a weirdly like mundane kind of thing. Because my theory about LeBron is that he's just a very normal guy. Like without basketball, I think he would, and if he wasn't, you know, 6'8" and built like a freight train, I think he would just be like a normal dude. Like he manages the grocery store down the street, or you know, he's like the opposite of Jordan. Where like anything he does after basketball, it would be like, oh, that's okay.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, he definitely seems like he won't be miserable.
Yeah.
He's more ambitious than a normal person. I think it's hard not to say that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in the sense that a professional... Yeah, he's ambitious. But to get back to the original question, I think the thing that makes a good cyclist elite is short arms. Like, all the best sprinters have these little tiny dinosaur arms because you can get really aero.
Yeah.
And the skill... Like, the Venn diagram for that has no overlap with the NBA. It's just... two circles.
I have that is a problem for me on a bike.
Actually, you have long arms?
I have a long torso.
Oh.
And I have...
I think you're a good swimmer.
Yeah, but I get really bored swimming. I actually am writing about cycling right now. For a website.
Oh, a web publication.
Yes, a web publication.
Does it rhyme with the clavicle?
Yeah, the blasicle it rhymes with. But yeah, I have an extended stem in my bike.
And stuff that's like cool. That.
And I'm getting I rode a lot last week, and I'm getting like pain on my armpit right there.
Oh, like the elbow pit?
Yeah. Pardon me. Yeah, my elbow pit. I'm getting a lot of pain in that area recently because my weight is all weirdly distributed on a bike.
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed climbing more as a cyclist. Descending is very scary to me because I know a lot of people who, you know, fall down, go boom, hit head.
I ride my brakes when I descend, and I went into the bike shop the other day, and they were like, your brakes are really fucked up. And I was like, yeah, that's probably because I ride brakes all the way down big hills.
There are a lot of hills in Portland. This is the number one topography and fitness podcast on the HB Basketball Network.
No, there's not a lot of hills in Portland, but Vancouver, where I live, is basically just three giant hills.
Is the NBA like gardening? How so?
No, not really.
Why not?
I've actually dabbled in these metaphors 1,000 times. I'm sitting here thinking about it. I think at best you could say that rookies are like transplant perennials, right? You get them in pots from college, and you stick them in your team yard, right?
Right.
And then hopefully they grow into something that's functional and beautiful. So yeah, I guess. But like, the active playing basketball isn't much like gardening at all, I don't think.
No.
Because it happens in 48 minutes, and a garden is a thing that progresses exponentially, non-linearly.
Suppose the accelerated lifestyle or life cycle analogy we posited earlier in the podcast. Mm-hmm. Now, say that if we're talking about careers as lifespans where, you know, we almost walk off into that sunset and, you know, die. Suppose a game is like a garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
But stretched, you know, compressed into this 48-minute package where, I don't know, I haven't thought this through.
The problem is that a garden I guess a food garden dies at the end of the year, but
So suppose the goal is to just bear fruit here, not to like have a good. What makes a good garden? Is that too long to answer?
Yeah, good quality soil, good drainage, access to light, or access to the amount of light that the plants in the garden need. Those three things, pretty much.
Who would make the best gardener in the NBA?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it's not that good a question, but
it's okay. It's not bad.
Who has a gardener's temperament? Whoever is the most process oriented, I would say.
It's got to be a Spur, right?
Yes, it is a Spur. I think I would probably say Duncan. Maybe Kawhi Leonard.
I'm going to cheat, and my answer is the Spurs.
But I'm not going to. Ginobili would be a terrible gardener.
Oh, yeah.
Parker couldn't garden for his life. Also, no. He's French. We all know about how the French treat plants.
Enchanté.
All they can do is plant grapes. Ask me, and you are asking me.
Yeah, that was encompassed in the question.
So what other hobbies do I have, and who would be good at them? Who would be a good sketch comedian? I can't say that for sure at all. I don't think any athlete would be.
Do you think Blake Griffin is funny?
I think Blake Griffin's kind of funny
because there seems to be a big push to have Blake Griffin, funny guy, be a thing. And he's funny, but I don't know if he's that funny.
I mean, I think he's funny enough to be funny in an advertisement.
Yeah, that commercial in the town.
Don't mention commercials. Specifically. I have this thing. Okay, sorry. Oh. I have this thing with commercials.
Good. Let's get into it.
Jesus Christ. I was watching basketball today. And for some reason, the commercials were really, like, sticking in my craw a lot. There's one commercial they're playing on the League Pass all the time.
They play commercials on League Pass?
Yeah.
Just the music?
No, they play commercials on League Pass. Don't you have League Pass?
Yeah.
Anyway, they play commercials on League Pass. One of the commercials is for liquor, and there's a jazz band playing, and
because jazz is the music of the devil.
Yeah, yeah, hail Satan, and then this guy starts beatboxing as a white guy, and he's beatboxing with this exclusively African American jazz band, and then everybody's like, "Oh yeah, this is great," and it's the worst. It's just horrible. It's like a nightmare commercial, and I hate it more than anything in the world. You'll note that I didn't say what the name of the product is. That is because I see commercials on TV all the time, and occasionally on Twitter.com or in the kind of websites where people are obligated to have a churn of content, they will write about the specific content of a commercial.
Yeah, I hate that.
And I watch commercials occasionally. Sometimes I think they're good. Sometimes I think they're really good. But I really think that, like, I feel like a tool if I write about them. I feel like, or if I mention them to people as conversation pieces. Because that's the goal of this company, is to get me to talk about this thing.
And, no press is bad press.
Yes. And I don't need to do somebody else's work for them.
Yeah, you can appreciate the aesthetics of a commercial, but just know that, like, at its heart, it's rotten.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a commercial, and I don't need to promote somebody else's product if they're not going to pay me to do it.
Okay, so if we mention the name of that car company that I was talking about earlier, then the capitalists win, you're saying?
Yeah, well, yeah, it would violate my personal... It's like calling the Rose Garden by its fake name.
The Vampire Center.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, we haven't had any updates on the Vamps in the NBA lately, have we?
Nah, I don't know. All
right.
I wrote like a 3-minute long thing about how I played Dracula 1-on-1. Like, where do I go from there?
Yeah, that's pretty much the apex.
I guess I could, like, go to his castle with Dr. J, and we could kill Dracula together.
Did you ever play that that browser game Barkley, where it's a post-apocalyptic basketball?
I believe you're talking game. Shut Up and Jam 2, Gaiden.
Yeah, that's the wait. There's a 2?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the idea behind the thing is that it's a sequel to Shut Up and Jam.
Oh, but it's an RPG. Right.
No, I haven't played it.
Okay, I played it so long ago. So I'm going to explain the plot to you.
Okay, go ahead.
Because what the heck? As far as I remember it. So it's the future, and some baller unleashed the best dunk known to mankind called the Chaos Dunk.
I believe Barkley unleashed the dunk.
See, this is the problem. I'm explaining it, but you know it better than I do.
Yeah. Well, Barkley unleashes the Chaos Dunk.
The Chaos Dunk, and basketball's banned forever, right?
And Michael Jordan is like their goon.
Yeah, he's our is perfect.
Who keeps basketball banned?
And then you have to go on a quest, and you learn various b-ball moves. And you're trying to get basketball unbanned.
You know what the most depressing ending for Jordan would have been? If he retired from basketball the second time, and then he went and played independent league baseball.
Oh, man. Like, imagine if he, like, was living in Venezuela as, like, a 56-year-old playing in, like, the winter league down there in single A. It was hitting, like, 230, and just no one heard from him again. That would be a better ending than...
Is that romantic, or is it depressing?
I don't know. Maybe because if we're not hearing from him, we can imagine that he's Jordaning it up without really having to see, like, the depressing downside, aka his genes, on a, you know, daily basis.
Yeah. Almost any other. I don't know. Maybe that would have been the best possible ending. Now that I'm sitting here thinking about it, like, he just went back to his dreams.
Yeah. Like, he just walked off into a literal sunset and just said something, like, unbelievably corny, and that was it.
What if Jordan hang glided all the time? Well, nah, because that would be like, oh, I'm looking, I'm searching for the intensity, and now I'm doing crazy things to get the intensity. That would be no good. That's a bummer.
Yeah, what if you got really into, like, what if you bought a metal detector and just went to the beach all the time? It's just like, I'm going to find me a wedding ring around here one of these days. You just wait.
I find that less depressing somehow, because I feel like that's such a like slow, that's such a meditative thing. If Jordan retired from basketball and then like went to the top of a mountain and lived to meditate, I would think that was beautiful.
Yeah, that would be a great ending.
Yeah, like, I've gotten everything I can get out of, you know, this jacked out, crazy, intense lifestyle. I've milked it bone dry. I've sucked all of the marrow out of that bone. And so now it's time for me to seek transcendence.
Bone marrow is a superfood. Keep going.
Well, yeah, I think you know how I feel about bones.
But, yes.
But now it's time for me to sit on the mountain and find enlightenment and transcendence in solitary in my own heart. I would think that was a good ending for Jordan.
Okay, what if he went to academia?
Oh, that would be no, because he'd be like one of those crazy competitive.
Exactly, business school, shock jock, dude.
Shock like, jock.
Well, you know, like. I've never been to business school, but I imagine it's very similar to sports radio ever in there. Just like, it just has all the takes and no one shuts up. And I imagine, you know, you walk into business school 101 and Jordan's like, all right, take the books out and burn them.
And then it's he just teaches everybody to play basketball.
He just teaches everyone to play basketball.
This is how you succeed in business. Turn around.
You can't learn nothing in these books. And then there's a revolt 3 weeks in and he's fired. But it's a big scandal for Arizona State University.
Oh.
I think I haven't been able to do a BizCast ball without like being unnecessarily cruel to other West Coast universities. I'm comporting myself like a Stanford graduate.
Tell me the worst thing about Stanford.
It's basically a front for big tech companies who pour all their money in exchange for Stanford research and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
Don't come after me, lawyers. Notice I'm not naming names. Wait, did I name names?
No. Like you didn't name the names of companies, like Google. You didn't say IBM.
Yeah.
You didn't say, I can't think of any other Silicon Valley companies. But. That famous new at but. But the
but.
Yeah, but the U is like a fancy U.
Yeah, it's like a negative space U.
Exactly.
It looks like BTT unless you like, tilt your head the right way.
It's like the U they use in uTorrent.
Oh, yeah. Like the mu U, like Greek letter.
Yeah.
It's a you that strikes you in such a way that thinks, I'd give him $10 billion for that.
Yeah. I would pay $10 billion for butt.
Oh, something that's going to come out tomorrow when this podcast does. I wrote about...
Oh, let's talk about whatever you wrote about.
NBA, not the NBI. The NBA franchise valuation list that Unnamed Magazine, which we can't mention on this podcast, just published the other day.
I am willing to name a magazine.
Oh. If you give an inch, they'll take a mile, Corbin.
That's true. We'll call it Blorbs.
No more names the rest of this podcast.
Blorbs Magazine. Not even human beings' names.
Blorbs Magazine. Well, we'll see how far we can take it until it gets egregious. But basically, the point I made was that when the basketball team in L.A. with the red colors was sold to Turtle Man, for 2 billion clams.
You think is money a brand name now?
I think I took it too far already.
The dollar is just a brand, man.
Because the American government, man, they're watching us.
The only unbranded currency is Bitcoin.
like Butcoin.
With a little U, right?
Yeah, Bootcoin.
Bootcoin.
Bootcoin. The Kings accept Bitcoin, which, if that still exists, that's like the least surprising bit of news you heard today, I bet.
Yeah, I'm right behind the Corbin, you're very good looking. That was the least surprising part of the
night. I can't even see what you look like.
No, it's I don't usually have video up, but you know, I'm talking about
this. Might not even be you. Collision, is that you?
I forget what Collision's.
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah.
The Forbes list.
Oh, shit, I said it.
The Blorbs list.
Yeah, the Blorbs lubes.
Blorb.
Basically, my point was, if their valuations are always low.
Is this for a Blyce Sports that you wrote this?
This is for Spice Boards.
Spice Boards?
It's the, which is short for Spice Vortex, the only home for spice hot takes.
Hot takes?
Yeah, no. Hot takes about spices.
Oh, what's your hottest take about spice?
Turmeric is garbage.
Wow. Oh my god, sorry, I'm getting a call. It's from the National Turmeric Council. And it just says, tell Patrick to eat shit and die.
Wow. See, this is what happened, you name names.
Wow, unbelievable. Anyway, Forbes list, your point.
My point was, if these teams are going for more than their valuations, and I don't know if we're ever going to see another team sold for under $1 billion, then the owner's case that they're losing money and therefore can't pay players evaporates. And more importantly, the practice where owners will hold a city hostage and say, you have to give us $250 million to build the stadium or else we'll leave, because you have to do this because it's going to help the economy. Like, I think maybe, hopefully, in a perfect world, that jig is up, or at least on its way to becoming up.
It probably isn't, though, because...
Oh, no, the capitalists will always win. But
yeah, because the forces that push that are, I think...
incredibly sinister, yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to say incredibly sinister, but I would say they're like tens. Okay.
You talked about turmeric, and now I'm all fired up, and I can't go half-assed anymore.
I don't even know if I can conjure turmeric in my mind right now.
It smells like armpits. That's the thing about turmeric. It's the same as with like fish sauce, where it smells kind of weird, but then in the context of food, it becomes good. So turmeric association, get off my back. It's not that bad.
Just out of context is bad.
Yeah, like it's if you smell it.
Bad. I need to work on my enunciation.
Enunciation. I think, do I mumble?
Do you mumble?
Do I mumble?
I don't think you mumble that much.
Thank you, Corbin.
You want to talk about Inherent Vice?
Oh, yes. I love that movie.
Okay. I saw Inherent Vice. It's okay. Great.
Okay. So, in my time on the internet in the past couple months, I've seen this opinion come up a lot from a lot of different people. And it goes like this. They say Inherent Vice is antagonistically incoherent. It is so mean to the viewer, and it's pretentious, and it's full of itself because it doesn't give you the plot and hold your hand. And therefore, I reject this movie and think it's bad and not funny. And I generally let people have their opinions, but this one, it gets in me. It opens up a row. If I'm using that word right, I'm probably not. But I don't like that we can't accept difficult fiction and pieces of art that don't go out of their way to make it easy to understand. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
So
I didn't even think it was that hard to understand, in particular.
Did you read the book?
No.
Okay.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, you did.
There's basketball in the book. He mentions the New York sports basketball franchise and the yellow LA franchise by name multiple times, and it's almost like a motif.
Huh, I didn't know.
So
I've only read his easy book.
Wait, that is his easy book though.
Oh no, Crying Lot is, I thought, very easy.
I mean, I've heard that one is, I also love that book.
Crying Lot.
Yeah,
Earn Crying Lot. Okay. Yeah, I adore Crying Lot, but.
But you follow the plot of Inherent Vice, having not read the book.
I feel like I did all right.
Well, you're a smart man, but that's something I worried about, was that people weren't be able to follow it. But you know, of the people whose movie opinions that I respect, that I've talked to, they said, yeah, you can tell what's going on.
I feel like I was like prepared to really not understand what was going on, and when I got in, I was like, oh, it's like a Pinchon plot. There's a sinister underground organization. It's connected to a bunch of things. The idea is that it's sort of vague. I think the best. I mean, I was shocked by how Pinchon-y it is.
It's about as faithful and good of an adaptation as you could possibly do in a movie.
More Pinchon-y than it is Anderson-y, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it's a particularly PTA-ish PTA film.
No, it's not like, there's not like, it's definitely not like crazy go for broke.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well,
like,
all the sort of uncomfortably close-ups and concentrations on facial expressions, I thought built the climate of paranoia really well. That's Pinchon-y, and I don't think PTA tends to do shots like that.
No, not really. The Master's a little more subdued in that regard, but even then, like, there's still parts where Philip Seymour Hoffman yells "pig fuck" and like stuff like that.
Do you think it's "pig fuck" one word?
Yeah, he goes,
two
pig
words,
fuck.
Or is there a hyphen, or is it like one word but the F is also capitalized?
No, it's one word. Oh, wow. But I am interested in this.
What is the style guide for "pig fuck"?
Well, I don't know. Like,
I think it's
Master?
Hyphenated.
Pig dash like, fuck.
Oh, what does it say in the script? That's what we should look up. But
I'm not looking up the script of the Master.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I'm not moving.
You're not moving to get your copy out of them.
I'm not moving, period. This podcast goes until my computer dies.
Oh, wow.
Actually, it's on 28%. But anyway, what I was going to say about Inherent Vice, the movie, is that even if you give the haters, the doubters, the naysayers, if you give them the point that it's difficult and hard to understand, like, once you start to dig into the movie thematically, you'll realize that that's a conscious choice and that it builds into sort of...
Yeah, of course.
Like, the Pinchon-y, you know, entropy is the theme. And, like, it's all about an unraveling, essentially.
Yeah. You've read Crying Lot. So Crying Lot ends... Crying Lot's ending is one of my favorite things I've ever read in a book. Because it basically is the main character sitting in the auction house...
And they're going to figure out whether or not they're crazy or the Tristero is like this sinister.
Yeah. And she's like, is it like this fake thing that got set up for me? Am I going crazy? And then it just doesn't give you the answer at all.
I love that.
Yeah.
I think we're too obsessed with endings.
Yeah, I agree.
I think appreciating process is an incredible, I mean, underrated is the wrong word for it, but I think it's the way I most appreciate things, and I think it's, you can get a deep appreciation of art and, you know, all the other artist things.
I'm trying to write about process. That in sports more when I think about things, I think.
Okay.
You know how I do the drawing recaps?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the idea behind that is, like, to examine something in a moment and just continually re-examine moments instead of trying to impose an arc on a game. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that. I like that way of looking at the game.
Because, I feel like a lot of times advanced statistics and aesthetics, people who write and think about those things sort of stand at odds with each other
Yeah.
In sports. And I think that because I think people in aesthetics are attracted to stories in games, mm-hmm. and I think that people in statistics are attracted to sort of luck and how arbitrary it kind of is. But lately I've been thinking more about how if you think about the game as a sort of series of incidents that are dictated by fate and dictated by, well, not fate, pardon me, fate is the narrative one, but are dictated by luck and chance and randomness, that can inform an aesthetic view of the game that is different than narrative, that makes it more like poetry. I don't know. That's how I've been thinking about it lately. I think it's especially apparent in baseball.
Yeah.
More than...
Well, I think baseball is basically a random number generator played out by men in pajamas.
Yeah.
Which is why it's the best sport for summer.
Yeah, because it's fatalistic. And summer's too nice, and you need to be constantly reminded of the fact that it's going to end.
Yeah, like if basketball is a sport where these life cycles play out at, oh, I don't know, 5 times the speed, baseball is a sport where it's basically a funeral every day.
Yeah. That was really beautiful.
A funeral for what? Who knows? Golden Fang could be behind it. What if the Golden Fang ran the NBA?
Well, it would be a heroin smuggling front.
Okay, yeah.
That would probably be the biggest change. I was writing about how Cousins' relationship with the refs is a little pinchani, I think. Like, who started it, you know?
It was always there.
Yeah, who it'll benefits?
Be there.
Who benefits?
Yeah. Well, it's incredibly internecine.
Internecine?
Internecine? Did I say... Yeah, internecine.
What does internecine mean?
It's a mutually degrading conflict. Like, both sides leave the worse for wear. It's sort of... The way I think about it is in fluvial geology, like, suppose a riverbed, molecules will self... Or not molecules, like rocks and pebbles and shit. They'll self-select, and where similarly sized molecules will hit and they'll stay, because if anything is bigger, the bigger one will always crush the smaller one. I guess it's not really internecine, but basically, this, you know, it's like a self-selection, mm-hmm. where they'll just glob together and stay, and they'll never be able to move down the river. And I think Cousins and the refs are two similarly sized molecules, and they've just, it's inextricable.
They're just tied together forever.
Yeah, there's no one's gonna, you know, no one is of sufficient size to overcome the other. And I think that speaks to Cousins' incredible force of personality and also his sort of Baroque style of play.
That his arguments with the refs, you mean? Or?
Yeah. Yeah, well, because he also, like, in the style thing, I think he just gets himself into situations where things he does get him into trouble through no fault of his own, simply because it's the way his body is shaped or the way he moves his arms, and it's not his fault, and it's not his fault, it's just there.
But then the refs put that on him, and then he gets mad about that, and they're just in a dance forever.
Yeah, because if either side gives way, you know what's going to happen. Like, if Cousins starts taking 25 free throws a game, you know, we have another Shaq situation on our hands. And if he accedes, then he's going to foul out and play 30 minutes a game, and the NBA is a less fun place to be.
The most fascinating thing about Vivek insisting that the pace get increased is definitely that Cousins' foul rate is up so high.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to play 25 minutes.
Yeah. Oh boy, Vivek, am I right?
Yeah. Vivek, I think my favorite. Oh,
Vivek's a little pinch on.
Your thing froze.
My thing froze.
Vivek is the. Who is he in Inherent Vice? He's certainly in the Golden Fang.
Oh, absolutely.
We can agree on that, right?
Absolutely.
I think he's somewhere between the Martin Short character, who was hilarious in his 5 minutes of screen time.
And the greedy hippie. Goddamn, Martin Short is so funny in that movie.
He's so funny. He runs out of his office while he's trying to dig his pants off.
The best part is the little finger twirl when he's like pointing at all the cocaine.
And yeah, and his head's back.
And his head's back. He's so good in that movie.
Oh, man. I didn't know who Martin Short was before this movie.
You didn't?
That really dates me.
Oh, man.
I'm like 12.
Yeah, it updates you. No, it dates me that I knew who he was. He's in Mulaney. He's good in Mulaney, too. You know...
I'm sure he is.
I haven't had anybody to talk with this about. Joanna Newsom is in Inherent Vice.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know Joanna Newsom was going to be in Inherent Vice. It took me immediately off guard.
I think maybe that's the point.
Except how many fucking people even... Like, what's the Venn diagram of Joanna Newsom and people who are seeing Inherent Vice necessarily?
Well, both circles are small. So it's like a little bitty Venn diagram. That's the thing. I know who Joanna Newsom is, and like I know that's someone I should know, and I know what her music sounds like. But if no one told me that was her, I would never have known.
Okay, I love Joanna Newsom.
Okay.
And I actually, it took me off guard at first, but then as it went along, it occurred to me why she got cast, and I was like, wow, that's a good idea. Because her music has that same sort of how do I say this? Tumble into a river quality where she like ba 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 ba. One time a friend of mine asked me to sing.
There's a rhythm to it, yeah.
Yeah, there's a rhythm, but it's not consistent in any way. And it's an odd rhythm is the only way to... One time a friend of mine asked me to sing a Joanna Newsom song. And I...
No one else can sing a Joanna Newsom song but her.
Yeah. Oh, no. I discovered this. And it was like... And so I was trying to do it myself, and it was really hard. So I was like, I'm a teacher where monkey and bear usually lay. Ba 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 ba. And I was trying to do it myself, and it's absolutely fucking impossible.
Are we allowed to swear on this podcast?
I don't apparently. Brian swears on his.
Okay.
So I just assume that Brian is doing the right thing.
Okay. Cause I've been doing it the whole time, but not knowing whether I should or not. Cause I remember I was on a Cavs the Blog podcast last year. And I'd been off my phone all day, and someone just made a joke about how Lou Reed had just died. And I said, oh shit, Lou Reed just died. And then everyone started yelling at me.
Oh, wow.
And it was all on the podcast.
Yeah, I think I started making the podcast, and then I listened to one where Brian said the F word, and then I said, oh, that's probably fine then.
He said Forbes.
Yeah. Patrick just did a handgun gesture.
It was more of like a finger snap thing.
Or a finger snap? I can snap my fingers like that, but I...
Can you do it in the mic?
I shouldn't though, because it hurts my hand.
Do you have any other like weird talents, like physically?
I can do the finger roll. I can do the tongue roll. I think that's pretty common though, right?
Yeah, everyone can do that. Can you do like the double tongue roll where it looks like a taco salad roll?
No, I can't do the one where it looks like a taco salad roll. What do you got, Patrick?
Double jointed in the thumb.
Oh, congratulations.
My wingspan is longer than my height. By 3 inches.
I think I'm a little tall. Mine might be two. I don't know. I have short legs.
Yeah, I have red hair. You do. Yeah, we talked about this.
I don't have red hair. I have brownish hair.
I want more people to be red haired. Like I'll try to co-opt people. You on the redder side of brown into redheadedness just because. It's lonely out here.
I have red facial hair.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. One time I was at my friend's house, and I looked at his Google searches, and the top search was, why is my beard red? It's just like the saddest thing I've ever read in my life.
What did I do wrong?
Why is my beard red? Do I have any other talents?
If you were at a talent show, so say there's like a basket blogging talent show, and it's like, oh, well, you know, Corbin's gonna pull out his blank routine.
Well, I don't know. I'm probably just sing or do a skit.
Oh yeah, you're a comedian. That's a talent.
Not really anymore, but I'm a writer. I'm a writer now.
I'm a writer.
I drink black coffee.
The bourbon bastard.
Yeah, I drink bourbon and I think about children. I write about children, apparently.
You know, now that I asked you, I started to think of that, my answer to this question. I don't know if I have any talents.
I feel like I have one. Oh, I can,
I can read really fast.
I can, I can touch my toes from a standing position.
What? That's amazing.
Yeah. I have really flexible quadriceps.
Do you do yoga?
No.
Wait, that's because you have a long torso.
I also have flexible quadriceps. We used to do,
flexible, like hamstrings or like the top part?
The back part.
Back, wait.
I guess that's
the hamstring. Okay.
Yeah. When we did President's Challenges stuff and you do the one where they hold down your legs and you go forward, I would get like 3 inches past my feet when I was younger.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't touched my toes since middle school.
Well, you touch them by bending your knees.
No, I just don't touch my toes.
I should do yoga. I'd be really flexible. Every form of exercise that isn't cycling bores me to tears.
Wait, cycling doesn't bore you to tears, though?
No, I love... No. No, it doesn't. I think cycling's awesome.
Have you read The Rider?
What?
Have you read The Rider?
No. That was a book Collision gave you, right?
Yeah, it's really good. It's about this Dutch author, Tim Krabbe, or Krabbe, or Krabbe, who wrote The Vanishing, which they made into a couple movies. But anyway, The Rider is about, it's nonfiction, it's like 120 pages, it'll take you 2 hours to read. And it's fantastic. It's just a chronicle of this race he's in. And, you know, he's so talented. If he came to cycling early, he, you know, maybe could have been a pro. But, you know, so it goes, that's life. And he gets into it late, and it's a chronicle of this one long, grueling, absolutely grueling race. And peppered in is like his history of cycling and then his, you know, some just writing about cycling in general. And it's fantastic.
Patrick, I'm going to look into that book.
Oh, that's cool.
But I don't have any books to recommend.
What are you reading right now?
Dog farts. I'm reading dog farts.
Yeah. Someone got me the Dog Farts 2, but I haven't read the first one yet.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a continuity there.
Yeah.
I've been terrible about reading for the last year or so. I've been reading more poetry, I guess, lately, to an extent. I like Elizabeth Bishop a lot.
I don't know where to start with poetry. Like, I like the stuff I've read, and I like poetry, but I just don't know, like what do I do? How do I start reading poetry? Where is poetry? Where do I find it?
I don't know. I started reading in college because they gave me anthologies.
Evergreen.
Shout out to Evergreen. Are there any more basketball topics we can cover before? Because this one got off topic.
Yeah, this was good. This got weird really fast.
I will talk to literally anybody about Joanna Newsom in Inherent Vice. I think it's a brilliant casting idea.
It was very smart.
Okay.
It's interesting. In the book, her character is, you know, there's some question of whether or not she exists. In the book, not only does she exist, she's not really, she's a minor character. There's like one acid trip scene which they had to cut for the movie, and that's like her main involvement. And she's sort of just there, like as much as Dinas is in the movie.
I forgot who Dinas was, but
he's the guy with the jorts who accidentally breaks off Doc's steering wheel when he's in the Golden Bank building.
Okay.
Spoilers, there's a steering wheel accident.
There's a steering wheel accident in Inherent Vice.
It's inconsequential.
People will do drugs. On a certain level, when you watch the movie, do you just kind of want Doc to settle down with Penny? I don't think that this is a healthy way to think about art or literature. I want to make this perfectly clear. Like imposing your desires for what the character should do. Like, I don't think that's like a smart way to think about literature. But the entire time I was just like, oh, Penny seems nice.
Yeah, they have a good back and forth bickering relationship. Okay, so think about this. Like, if the problem with Bigfoot and his wife's relationship is that it's sort of this past future tension where she wants like a Leave It to Beaver 50s style household, but Bigfoot wants to be a Renaissance detective who wants to sweep away, you know, any vestiges of.
Does Bigfoot eat a plate full of pot in the book?
I don't remember, but I found that scene singularly hilarious in the movie. He's going in on that like Scooby Doo into like a plate of Scooby snacks.
Okay, anyway, Bigfoot tension with his wife.
Well, like, basically she wants to go for this like 50-star relationship, and you know, there's, you know, he absolutely does not, and there's this weird past future tension, and you know, in it, it's the story of the American family, blah blah blah. But I think Doc and Penny are a lot more futuristic. I don't think they run into any of those problems, even though they come from totally different worlds, or I guess different sides of a very, very strange world, the legal one. Yeah. But I don't know.
Damn, the scene where he goes, can you open a file for me? And she goes, yeah, of course I can. We do it all the time. He goes, that's illegal. She goes, grow up.
Yeah, there's in the book, their relationship is a lot more established. Or like, they do more.
Oh.
They do it.
Oh, what are you talking about? sexual intercourse?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the Between Two Ferns of your podcasts.
Yeah, I guess it's a little floaty. Cause the ones with Bob, you know, those always have like purpose.
Yeah, those are weird, but in a structure.
Yeah.
Too much meta commentary. So, the Bulls, good. Not good? What do you think about them?
What I think about the Bulls? I don't know. I hope they're not good.
Do you know that the Hornets have won 8 out of their last 9 games?
No, I didn't know that.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, that is weird. They were really bad at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, they're one of those teams where, you know, they make a big signing and everyone predicts good things, and when it doesn't work out, you sort of think like, oh, okay, it didn't work out, and you just don't think about them.
But they've been good?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, Miles writes about the Hornets a lot because Miles thinks Biombo is the truth.
Oh, well, that's an opinion.
Yeah. Apparently Biombo has like an insane block rate.
But does he have any other NBA skills?
I don't know. I mean, if an insane block rate translates into rim protection, like that's basically all you need to be a $10 million NBA player.
But I think we have this fallacy that a lot of blocked shots equals good rim protection. I mean, I guess it does, like in a literal sense, it does.
If you're young, I think the idea is that eventually it can translate into that. Tyson Chandler was kind of that way, right?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of blocked shots. Raw, but he refined.
Yeah, because like you can't teach that ability to block shots, but like you can teach people, you know, how to read a pick and roll.
Yeah, Tyson's so great.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well this year, right?
Yeah, he's doing good.
Chandler. I hope the Mavs do well in the playoffs.
Playoffs are going to be such.
I'm really nervous for them, you know, because everything you read about the playoffs is just, oh, it's all about the matchups. Just hope you get Portland or Dallas, and I don't think that's fair, Portland or Dallas. I mean, don't kill the messenger, but I just hope that...
Don't kill the messenger, but everybody wants to play Portland?
Don't kill me, yeah. Don't get mad at me,
everybody wants to play Portland. You know who wanted to play Portland? Houston wanted to play Portland. And you know what happened to Houston? They got beat!
Damian Lillard happened to Houston.
Yeah, god damn it. Damian Lillard is like a mythical figure now, and I just don't think I can handle it.
I feel like I contributed to this.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. But, you know.
Yeah.
Why can't it just be a nice, quiet team? With these comebacks, too. Oh, my God.
Okay, we talked about this last time. Said you were maybe sick of, like, 50-win seasons. Like, you want more. Like, so what is your ideal Trailblazers season? Like, give me the synopsis.
The Warriors season. They just win every game by 20. And, just nothing happens except they win every game by 20. Also, Aldridge takes threes.
Okay, so you just want them to win forever. Perfect sound forever.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know, maybe I don't want to do that. You know what I always say to people is that I kind of wish they were bad because then tickets are cheap.
And then families can go.
Yeah, the last time they were bad, 2 years ago, it was a really, really special bad team because the starting five was great, like great competitive every night. But their bench was just like a nightmare, just like a horrible, horrible nightmare.
That was the pre Allen Crabbe era, right?
Yes. Yes. That's what we all refer to it as.
The Allen Crabbe era.
Yes. That's what we have been referring to the era since Stott started coaching, is the Allen Crabbe era.
Good.
Yeah, because the starting lineup was fine, and they would be competitive and entertaining, but the rest of the team just stunk, and so they were bad, and so tickets were cheap, so you could get really cheap tickets to the games
to watch two really good players.
Yeah, to watch. Yeah, well, and Batum and Matthews were not bad.
Yeah, no, they're very good NBA players.
Yeah, and they've been very good. There was one year where There's 1 year where Matthews was not great, but. The Felton year, Matthews is not good that year. But
I forgot about the Felton year.
Oh man, Ray. I saw a picture of Ray. Looking a little Corbin Smithy, if you know what I mean.
Solid callback. I think the ideal season just depends on like whatever you're used to. So, you know, you have this climate of being good.
They're having the same season they had last year.
Yeah, they started out really hot.
Yeah, and they play a lot of close games with a lot of leverage. And
but the defense is better this year. Like, that's a significant significant change. Whereas, like, last year you think, okay, they're making a lot of jump shots. Mirage, mirage, mirage.
They're better, but everybody's better.
Yeah, the West is just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm just, like... I'm starting to think about,
we're not even talking about the Suns.
Go ahead.
What?
God, please, I was being rude.
We're not even talking about the Suns this year, and they're, like, this great, entertaining team, but, you know, they might just not make it. Like, there's no space for any weird, idiosyncratic teams in the playoffs this year. Like, it is a meat grinder.
I've been thinking more and more that maybe the East is right.
I was thinking about that today with, like, oh, the Nets shouldn't make the playoffs and the Suns have to sit out, but it's kind of fun if, like, weird teams like that make the playoffs.
The Nets shouldn't make the playoffs because they're horrible. Like, they're horrible on all kinds of levels, but the Bucks should make the playoffs.
They're an odious institution. They're a basketball team incorporated. But, yeah. The Bucks. Like,
the Bucks are
cool.
Great. Like, I want to watch the Bucks in the playoffs.
There's space for, like, young, ambitious teams with exciting players to make the leap into the playoffs, whereas, like, if you're the Kings and the Pelicans, you just got to wait.
Yeah, you just got to wait until somebody else falls apart or you are able to win 54 games.
Yeah, and it turns out the team that fell apart was the Nuggets, and then they got replaced with all these like other more stable teams, and now the Kings are never going to make the playoffs in my lifetime.
Are you crying?
No.
Oh my god.
I'm feeling very fatalistic about the Kings lately. And it's only halfway through the season.
They were so goddamn close.
They were so close to, like, a 500 season, and that would have made me so happy.
But they just fucked it up.
Fucked it up.
For no reason.
And you know what? If you take their time under Ty Corbin, with Cousins and extrapolate it, they're on pace for 28 wins, which would be like the fourth consecutive season at 28 wins.
If only if you had Ty Corbin.
If you say, okay, who they are, like, with Cousins under Corbin, that is who they are now. They'll play that level of basketball the rest of the year. That averages out to 28-54 for, you know, I don't know, three in a row now, I think.
Ty Corbin. Yeah, he has a good last name. I've made that joke before.
It's all right. I've made that joke, too. Oh, shit, what was I going to say? Yeah, so you want the Blazers to be great, but if the Kings made the playoffs, I would be very happy.
I'd be ecstatic.
I'm sure I'd be where you are and you want them to be great, but, man, I don't know. I don't see any way out of this darkness.
I want the Blazers to be on, like, I feel like right now they're, like, mythic in a way. Like, oh, they'll keep it close, and then they'll get you in the last minute. But I just want them to be a battleship. A battleship are not very good, so I can afford tickets.
Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much there. I think there are only three kinds of NBA team. There's the battleship. Oh, there's two. You're right. There's two kinds. There's the battleship. There's not very good. And in the end, you figure out that there's only like four battleships. You're basically your ocean or you're a battleship.
Winning an NBA title is so unbelievably hard that
I'll never do it. That's for sure.
No, I won't either. I just never believe any team is going to win the title.
Yeah, and like this year where there's no, like, I don't think anyone should win the title.
Yeah.
I ever since Joe floated the theory on this podcast that the playoffs should just, or the season should just go on.
Oh, yeah.
It should be like college football and there's no playoffs.
Yeah, Joe, the minute.
I think that is the best idea I've ever heard. Like, why should we choose a winner? Why can't we just argue about it?
The minute they dissembled the BCS, Joe was like, man, that BCS, they should institute that in the NBA.
Joe. Yeah, that was a great idea. And I would love that if the Kings can't make the playoffs, no one can make the playoffs. And, you know, maybe we'll win like the, I can't name any brands on this to make any jokes, but
no.
Maybe they'll win our bowl our bowl best of three basketball series against like the Charlotte Hornets set in Austin, Texas. I would love that.
If, like, some really bad teams have to play European teams in their bowl.
Yeah, like Chiska Moscow has to travel to like Boca Raton to play, I don't know, the Wolves or something.
Boca Raton Bowl to play the Timberwolves.
See, it's a great idea.
Yeah, that sounds incredible.
Then you see, like, say we'll decide, like, oh, you know, what a better idea is just do it on all, like, regional rivalries. So the Kings play the Warriors in the, you know, I-80 Bowl every year. And that's just the end of the season. It's like Michigan-Ohio State.
Or the Hawks play the Grizzlies in the City Gear Bowl. Only I know what City Gear is. Oh, yeah.
Blah, the Hawks Grizzlies final this year is going to be amazing, and
that is my ideal final.
I'm so excited for that.
God, I hope the Hawks make the final so much.
I kind of like, I've established myself as a Hawks hater for a while now, but I think I'm just starting to like, let's do this thing.
I love it.
But actually, no, they shouldn't, because the finals are an odious institution. Basketball BCS is the only way.
Yeah.
Do you think Kyle Korver's an all-star?
I think he'll probably make it.
I want to believe, but I don't know.
You know, Luol Deng was an all-star in the East twice, right?
You know, I'm friends with his cousin.
Oh, what's he like?
Yeah, he went to school in Sacramento, and their dad like did some vaguely shitty government job that just no one knew about, and no one ever met him. And it was all very hush hush, and yeah, he's Luol's cousin. Nice guy.
Oh, good to hear. I hear only nice things about Luol Deng.
Do you think he speaks the British accent? Because he's like, he plays for the British national team, right?
Or I do not believe he speaks with the British accent.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It's maybe a little weird that I can't draw Luol Deng's voice off the top of my head.
I think he would be someone who would do really well with like a vow of silence.
Oh man, that'd be great.
I just think he has like the zen-like countenance for it. Like, you know, he'll just not talk and he'll go you know, the quietest 6 for 15 you've ever seen and somehow get 20, and like, it's cool.
One, you know the story about Dream seeing David Robinson get the MVP trophy before he played him in the playoffs?
No.
And then just annihilating.
Just killed him. Yeah,
and then he just killed him.
Yeah.
When that happened, Robinson got the trophy. He lives above the head. Dream says, "That man, he has my trophy." Like, something along those lines. And then he annihilates
like a Russian
him.
Accent.
Yeah. Yeah.
"That man.
That man is my trophy." And then,
he took him to school in the Boca Raton Bowl. Okay. So when I'm the commissioner, I'm gonna rewrite all playoffs history in just like this language.
just like assign bowls to every playoff series. Anyway, so Dream says that, and then he annihilates Robinson. The only every time I hear this story, it drives me crazy, because Robinson really was the best regular season player that year, but by a wide distance. The Spurs were the number one seed. The Rockets were the sixth seed. They weren't really good until they traded for Drexler. Like,
wait, did the Rockets beat the Spurs in that series?
Yes, they won the finals that year.
Oh, that was one of the Jordan plays baseball years.
Yes, one of the good years.
What years were those? Like 93?
94, 95.
Okay, I wasn't born yet.
Oh, wait, no.
I'm just kidding.
Wait, was it 94, 95? Yeah, 94, 95.
Yeah, 96, 96. That was very young.
Yes, 94, 95.
So he killed him.
Did you know that Hakeem had a winning record against Jordan?
He was like the only guy, right?
He was the only player to have a winning record against Jordan.
Yeah, someone wrote about that in the Free Darko Dream Week.
Yes, that is probably where I read it too.
Okay.
Which stands to reason.
It's amazing.
That he would have beat Jordan in the finals those 2 years.
Well, that's...
And he would have been better than Jordan. Hakeem was better than Jordan.
I mean, I agree. I mean, I never watched either of them in their primes.
No, but whatever. I can say whatever I want.
Also, tall basketball players are just better.
Yeah.
They do more stuff.
Yeah, he probably had more defensive value than Jordan, right?
Okay, here's a take. Tim Duncan is the greatest basketball player of all time.
I don't think that's a totally unreasonable take.
For some reason, this was a joke I made a lot for a while. To like my basketball friends, and then I just started to believe it, and now I say it, and I know it in my heart
that Tim Duncan is the greatest of all time.
Greatest basketball player of all time.
I mean, for like, he's on 3 title teams that ran offenses and defenses entirely through him.
And like, would you be surprised at all if they won the title this year and he put up 25 per game in the playoffs?
No, not at all.
I can see it now, like NBA season preview 2027, like, will LeBron James III win his MVP? Like, is Tim Duncan finally going to hang it up at age 73?
His legs are just robots now. We just let it happen.
He survived the Great Bug Wars. He can do anything.
This has gone long. We're going to start recording now.
This has been a very long podcast.
Yes, it has. If you're still listening, send me a tweet that says monkey brain. You know my Twitter handle probably if you're listening. All right. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Corbin. Thanks for having me. This is good.
Thank you to Patrick. You can follow him on Twitter at Patrick Redford, where you can where he promotes all the things that he writes. You can follow me on Twitter at Corbina Smith. That's CorbinaSmith. I don't know if you got any comments or anything. Shoot me an email. Hit me up on LinkedIn if you want to hire me to do something like roofing or something along those lines. Thank you for listening. Thanks for listening. Have a good week.